good morning. It's good to be here this morning and to look in your faces once again and to worship the Lord. With Willard, appreciated the service thus far. Been a blessing to be here. Lots of things to think about, Ruth and redemption and Boaz and so forth. The types that are there are many, and I was glad to be a participant in the class this morning and enjoyed the devotions and also the singing. Singing was very special, and I just blessed to be here this morning. It's special to be here. Brother John isn't here. It's the first time I was here since John isn't around. And so wish the Lord's blessings on the family once again. Palm Sunday. But I didn't choose to preach on that this morning. But I'm going to preach on a subject that I think is important. And maybe it only applies to a small percentage of, or a small percentage of you that are here this morning, but it does apply to quite a few of you. And the title of the message is The Courage of Visionary Leadership. Oftentimes we think of these kind of sermons at ordination and preparations for ordination and so forth, and that's not the case this morning. I think that leadership in the home, in the church, and school board members, trustee boards, outreach, you're all leaders that have an effect on people. And I hardly knew where to start in this, but I feel it's so important. A lot of times you get elected to the school board, and you sit there quietly and you're not sure what to say. I don't know anything about the curriculum, and you don't know how to hardly even to participate and so forth. I want to talk some about that, but I want to encourage you who are called to leadership to be leaders and to lead toward a goal and have a vision of how you're going to get there with the people that you lead. I know leadership is a lonely place to be sometimes. I don't know if I ever told it here before or not, but I was, before I was ordained, I was chairman of the school board for many years, and you know, you would have snow days, it'd be 5 or 6 inches of snow on the ground, and you'd get in your pickup and you'd drive around at 6:30 in the morning and say, should we have school or not? And you would be thinking, should we have school? And in the back of your mind, you would think, there's this group of people that say if the mothers slide in the ditch, then it's your fault. You know, you called for school, then it's up to you. But then there's the other side that says, we don't have snow, we're a bunch of wimps. And then this little debate goes on and on in your mind. Should we have school or shouldn't we have school? And so you get on the phone and you call fellow board members, and you call a couple of them, and they say, there's a lot of snow on the ground, but we'll do whatever you say. And That really doesn't help out a whole lot. You know, somebody needs to say if we're going to have school or not, not just whatever you say. So it comes back to you about making a decision that affects people's lives. And that's the big deal. Leadership does affect people's lives. And indeed, if you went driving down the road and you came to a mother with five children in the ditch with her minivan, you would feel somewhat responsible. But also, if you have talked to the old fellow in the church, we had snow when it was 10 inches, and you know, we didn't have any problem. We didn't think it was a big deal. Why can't we have school? So you have those two things. That's just an illustration of why it takes courage to lead. So I want you to follow along this morning. I'm not going to touch everything that needs to be touched on, nor do I know everything. It's not an exhaustive message, and I would encourage you to lead. If you're a school teacher, you're a leader. If you're on the school board, you're a leader. If you're on the trustee board, you're a leader. If you're a minister, you're a leader. There's can go on and on. I often had to think of an illustration of courageous leadership was when Pharaoh was behind the children of Israel, and Moses was there, and the children of Israel were the Egyptians, and their high-tech army were thundering up behind the children of Israel. And they came up to Moses and said, you know, we should have died in the wilderness like you said. You know, we should have just stayed in Egypt, and they would have taken care of us. Now we're going to die in the wilderness. And Moses said, I believe he lifted up his hand and he said, wait a minute, stand still. When the Egyptian army was thundering up behind him, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And what kind of courage that would have taken for him to say that. And then he had a little conversation with the Lord, and he had made this proclamation that the Lord would fight for you, and so forth. And then the Lord told Moses, why criest thou to me? He says, tell them to go forward. You know, the Red Sea's in front of them. And of course, we know the story there what that was asked there, the seeming danger to what was happening there. And we're not preaching about the Red Sea experience this morning. I want to go to Proverbs 29 and verses 12 to the end of the chapter for the sermon this morning. And while we're going there, I want to talk about how leadership does make a difference, and I'm not going to talk about this all that terrible much in statistics that I have, but leadership does make a difference. Children with engaged fathers are 80% less likely to be incarcerated. 80%, that's a huge amount. People that... children that have fathers that are engaged in their lives and talk to them, communicate with them, teach them, correct them, they're 80% less likely to be incarcerated. That means put in jail. 85% less likely to have children that are having children before marriage. 71% of all dropouts and 90% of homeless children come from leaderless, fatherless homes. Good leadership in the workplace has an impact on employee retention engagement and company profitability, approximately 70% of the team's engagement is by their leaders. So what that means is that if you work at a certain place, you like your boss. If you don't like your boss, you're not likely to stay there. Trust and communication in their leadership are keys to employees staying long-term with the company. Forward-looking positive vision is the most critical attribute of a good leader. Your attitude about life in general, about what you're doing, has a huge attitude that flows and permeates through the people you lead. 70% of employees appreciate recognition from their boss for personal effort, even above their paycheck. They like that. So today, if you're a leader in your home, in your church, on your school board, whatever, when somebody puts forth effort, recognize that. That's just a simple thing to do. People like leaders who do that. In church life, it's much the same. Let's read now our text from Proverbs 29. And starting in verse 12, and there's many leadership principles in here that I think we ought to bring out, but I'm sure we won't bring them all out. Verse 12 says, "If a ruler hearken to lies, all his servants are wicked." What a principle that is. "The poor and deceitful man meet together, the Lord lighteneth both their eyes. The king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall." Then he comes on with this powerful voice, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, yea, and he shall give thee light unto thy soul. Where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. A servant will not be corrected by words, for though he understand, he will not answer. Seest thou a man that is hasty in his words? There is more hope of a fool than of him. He that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become his son at the length. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. Whoso is partner with a thief hateth his own soul. He heareth cursing, and he beareth not. The fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. Many shall seek the ruler's favor, but every man's judgment cometh from the Lord. An unjust man is an abomination to the just, and he that is upright in the way is an abomination to the wicked." One thing we notice about this text, and there's a lot of things we could notice here, and I'm sure I'm not bringing them all out, but good leadership is the barrier and the correction to the wicked being multiplied in a society. That is what good leadership does. It keeps a society from the wicked being multiplied. The biblical model of leadership assumes that there is true love and deep concern regarding each person that they're responsible for their destiny. The confines of law is a happy place to be. Now, how can we... That is so foreign to us today. The confines of law is a happy place to be. That's what this passage says. So we want to talk about that a little later. There is respect for faithful leadership, both by God and man. It takes a man of passion to lead well, a man who has the conviction and the passion that there is a destiny to lead toward, who understands the dynamics of leadership, and who disciplines himself to accomplish the vision. So today we have three D's for the outline of this message this morning, and I'm sure it's not a very sophisticated outline, but it is the destiny, the dynamics, and the disciplines of leadership. Want to talk about those three this morning. First of all, the destiny of those we lead. Life has a labyrinth. You know what a labyrinth is? It's a design that goes everywhere. There's every way to go. Life is a labyrinth of choices, and mostly bad, but there's a few good pathways that will end well. So today, everyone is in this labyrinth, and by reason of who we are, we're human, and everyone is in this labyrinth, and there's a few good pathways to get out of that, but we need leadership to tell us how. Destiny is when you are concerned about how people turn out. Attaining destiny means setting goals on that destiny. You know, I'm a farmer, and it used to be, before we had auto steer on our tractors, that we plowed and or we planted corn, and you would look at a tree or a telephone pole out at the end of the field, and you would, you know, put the muffler in the tractor, the air cleaner in the tractor, and sight towards that telephone pole so you could have straight rows. That telephone pole was your destiny. But today, all decisions in life are subject to, you know, when you would drive that tractor, all decisions in life were subject to that telephone pole. You know, you wouldn't turn left, so you would go left. You wouldn't turn right, so you go right. You would go straight towards the telephone pole. And it seemed like, you know, it would help a little bit so you could get a straight row. Now, I never felt that I could develop a very straight row even when I did that. But all decisions in life are subject to the goal of that destiny. Verse says, there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Godly leadership is not doing what we think is best, but patterning it after the law of God. And our leadership must pattern after the law of God. You know, today I want to tell, I think it's important that we understand this. This is March 29, 2026. What are we doing today for heading towards a destiny? I mean, what is going to happen to this church in the destiny of 10 years from now, or 25 years from now, or beyond? I know we often think of destiny as glory and eternal life, and it certainly is that, but we have short-term destinies too. We want the school year to go well. On May 13th of this year, are we going to look back, and that's a destiny, and the school board's, I'm sure in the school board's life, did it go well? Did we lead well? And did we help people get to a destiny of satisfaction and of rest on May 13, whenever the last day of school is. The constant question in the mind of a person that has a firm sense of destiny will be, how will those I lead turn out? Where will those I lead be 100 years from now? Who will they marry? And what will their church look like? What gives you your motivation and your leadership? So when we see here on March 29, 2026, that... let's just take something very simple. My child, 3-year-old child, is running around after church and over the benches and up in the pulpit and climbing up in the pulpit. What? Well, you're a leader. What do you do about that? Does it figure into their destiny? Is it contributing to their destiny? Well, I think it does. Children shouldn't run after church in the sanctuary. It just shouldn't be. It does make a difference. Does it matter if I overlook my child's rebellion at school? Does it matter? Of course it matters. After church, is there any correlation with my sense of destiny, where I want that child to end up? Well, of course there is. And do I allow, as a school board, do I allow, am I careful about how I lead in the school board until I allow the teachers to, be in inappropriate settings and stuff? You know, there's endless supply of things that we could talk about. Leadership has destiny in mind is about creating a clear sense of buy-in to those we lead. Buy-in. They buy into our leadership. We need to create an atmosphere of trust and understanding in those that we lead. Leadership is about creating destiny in people's minds. So they think about, well, how if I do this, how is this going to turn out? So what do we need to do? We need to communicate my vision with those I lead. If you're a trustee on the church grounds, trustee board at church, and you can sell them. Trustee boards need to communicate things like stay off the grass, okay? Right? That's how they do that. They stay off the grass or stay out of, in certain situations. I know in our church, the trustee board regularly communicates that they want the children at school to stay out of the sanctuary in the church during school days. So we need to communicate all kinds of things. Are you communicating your vision clearly with those you lead? You need to grasp that communication thing. It's so important. Thomas Edison said that vision without execution is merely hallucination. Vision without execution is merely hallucination. So vision, you can talk all you want to, you can communicate all you want to, but if the vision isn't executed, it's only hallucination. It's a dream. So we need to correct, bring correction when we see people that are not following after the vision that they know. We need to realize that there are many things in the heart of those we lead. And finally, we need to humbly believe that we can make a difference in the destiny of those we lead. Abraham said, God said of Abraham, I know him that he will command his children and his household after him. They will keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. Abraham understood that commanding his children, communicating and commanding to his children, discipling his children, would have an outcome on their destiny. Now, to command, you set an order, guidelines that were definite. You tell them, this is where we want it, and this is where we expect you to be. And maybe we'll look at that a little later. And destiny is so important. We have the people's destiny in mind that we lead. Destiny. That's leadership. You have if you're on the school board, you have destinies set. The end of the school year, the intellectual achievements, something that you do care about. And of course, leadership is in the church is above, and it is concerned about destiny also. Secondly, the dynamics that affect leadership. The dynamics of leadership are concerned with causing, changing, or maintaining the motion of a people. How the church goes is because of leadership most of the time. What the leadership, how they affect the people. The first one the dynamics that affect leadership is the authority that comes with leadership. And I remember when I was ordained bishop, that was one of the hardest things for me to get used to. When you're a preacher, a minister, you can go to ministers' meetings, you can say your piece, and then somebody else has to make the decision. Which is okay. That's the way it's supposed to be. But I always looked at Brother Harry, I say my piece, and then what are you going to say? I mean, that was your decision. Well, finally, when I was ordained bishop, everybody would say their piece, and then everybody would look at me. And what are you going to say? And that was hard for me to get used to. It's still a little bit that way. I just wish that you could have somebody else to lean to and say, let's do this together, you know. But finally, it's like Harry Truman had on his desk, I believe the president, he said, the buck stops here. There's a place where you have to make a decision about what you're going to do. And you can listen and debate all day long, but finally there has to be a decision made, and it's the authority of leadership that we fear. One of the things that dynamic that we fear, and 1 Timothy 3:4 says, those who are chosen for leadership is one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how should he take care of the church of God? Leadership in the home rules. Here is right, here is wrong. This is right, this is wrong. You don't just say, well, what do you think, you know, and you as a leader, Dad, step up to the plate and say, this is where we are in our house. Lead, lead, lead. Please lead in God's way. Rule your own house. And your children are in subjection to that. They say, yes, I believe you, Dad. I'm in subjection. I will do this. I will start chores at 5 o'clock in the morning, or I will clean the garage on Saturday afternoon. We are in that's what it means to be in subjection. So, you know, do that in all gravity. Eli was held responsible for his son's behavior. Men, while the sisters are very important in supporting you, and they are to reverence their husbands, but remember, where your family turns out is largely up to you. That's just the turf of the leadership. You know, when Eli was held responsible for his son's behavior, Mrs. Eli wasn't mentioned. It was Eli. God said, I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. It was up to Eli to warn his sons, because he was vested with authority. You, fathers and leaders, are vested with authority, and it is up to you how things turn out. I don't want to be too severe, but that is the way I understand Scripture. And so today, fathers, school boards, trustees, ordained men, you all have authority in respective spheres of your life, and you are to lead. Second thing that we often think about is that every person has a will. All those that you lead have a will. One of the principles and goals of leadership is to work to harness the will of those we lead so that they want to do the right thing. Leadership has failed if those you lead are insistent on doing other than what you want them to. You need to harness the will so that they want to do the right thing. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. The dynamics that corrects the will is leadership, and that leadership must have accountability. And a simple illustration of this could be, a child needs to be instructed to work. Teach them to work and to love to work, and so that they choose to work. It is a fact that your child will sit on the couch and browse the internet if they are allowed to. Don't allow that. Over time, a child that is taught to work will not feel comfortable on the couch browsing the internet and will choose to work. That is his will conformed to your leadership. And we aren't very successful in leadership until they are convinced to choose the right thing. We know that sin nature is evident in each of our children and each of the people that you are leading. And they desire fleshly things, and we're by nature the children of wrath and so forth. But lead so that they want to follow you. And maybe we'll have a little advice on that here in a little bit. Another thing that comes into our leadership so many times is the influence of peers. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous man shameth his father. One sign of the quality of leadership is the peer group that the ones you lead gravitate to. And now, you can tell which way your family is going by the peer group that they follow. Yeah, and you can tell in your leadership and school boards and so forth like that if they want to follow you. Love and respect expressed is God's way of leading. Verse 29 of our text says, he that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become his son at the length. Now, I have had the privilege in my lifetime of working with sons and working with servants. There is a difference. Servants want the paycheck. They want Saturday afternoons off. And sons stick with you regardless of the paycheck, regardless of it. Saturday afternoon, if there's hay, they chop hay. They like that. But people that are servants, Saturday afternoon, that's the time to take off. But leadership, he that bringeth up his servant from his child shall have him become his son at the length. Treating them right, treating them with respect, love and respect, has a lot to do with how your leadership turns out. I want to look finally at the disciplines of leadership. The disciplines of leadership, number one, is I humbly accept my responsibility to lead and make decisions that affect other people. Positions of leadership are about making decisions for others. Presidents send men into battle. We've seen that just recently. President Trump sent scores of pilots into battle over Iran, and he's threatening to send many more ground troops right now. Presidents can send men into battle. School boards decide when to have school. Trustees decide when others need to stay off the grass and how often we clean church and so forth. But my advice to you I guess I'm an old guy now. It's hard to believe I'm an old guy. But the one thing I really appreciate when I go to a board meeting or a minister's meeting or a trustee's meetings is when people that participate in the meeting say their opinion. We're going to paint the church. We're going to paint the floor in the church basement, you say, because it looks ugly. That's just a simple illustration of what I believe. When the other fellow says, well, if we do this, it's $1,200, $1,500, we don't have for the church budget. And but please say, talk. The one thing that is so important to me is that people on the school board talk, give their opinion, and then, or the ministerial board, or the trustee board, they give their opinion, and then when the vote is taken, we're okay with it. Whether we won out on the painting the church basement floor or not, Be okay with it, but please state your opinions. Don't just sit there. Of course, don't go to the other side and get all riled up about it either. But you are placed on a board to lead, give direction. People want it. They're expecting it out of you. Lead. So one of the disciplines of leadership is humbly accept my responsibility to lead and make decisions that affect people. Number two, I will not let my emotions control my responses in leading people. We just read that an angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. My anger will be controlled. You know, I've been a leader for a number of years now, and leadership is often disappointed by those you're called to lead. You know, they don't seem to catch on, and they're often disappointing, and it's important that you don't respond in anger or in spite. It's so important that you do not let your emotions control your responses in leading people. I need to hasten on here. Number three, I will practice unquestioned integrity in my life and especially in my leadership. What I say will be the truth, and I will act only on verified truth. There's a principle of leadership that you must practice, and I want to throw it out here. Maybe it's not so much in some of your leadership, but in leadership, it is so important that there's two or three witnesses that verify an account. It's all over the scriptures, and so allow two or three witnesses to verify an accusation. I was up in Michigan. There's a farmer that killed his wife, and he purposely killed her, and to hide the evidence, he took an anhydrous tank and cut it open and put her body in there and left her in there. And she was in there for, body was in there for about 3 years until they finally figured out that there's one of these anhydrous tanks had new weld around the end of it. And so they took it to an x-ray machine, big x-ray machine up at Peace Bridge between the United States and Canada. They x-rayed, and they could see into the anhydrous tank, and they could see the body in there wrapped in a tarp. And so I knew the one fellow that was involved in that, the brother of the woman that was killed. And so I watched the courtroom proceedings, the court case, and every witness that they brought in there, they had to answer this question. Do you solemnly swear that the evidence you shall give to the court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Every witness that they brought had to say that. Tell the truth. Be completely honest in your leadership. Number four, I will be impartial to others regardless of the background, personality, and economic status of the person that's involved. Now, it's very similar to the previous point, but I will be fair with everyone regardless of their name, background, previous church affiliation, their grades in school, their abilities. And I also will reach out to the hurting in the flock. I will be totally impartial leader. Number five, I will teach the law acceptable group prodigal, the happiest people are those who are keeping the law. Every society has laws, whether they be written laws, cultural laws, but they have laws. Now, if you want a bad experience, you go down here to the local McDonald's and the sign on the door says no shirt, no shoes, no service. You go in there with bare feet and see what happens. That experience at McDonald's that day isn't going to be very nice when the manager comes out and say, get out of here, you don't have shoes on. So that was law. We try to enter McDonald's without a shirt, we can expect an unhappy experience. Children are at rest when they see the leader in their home consistently using discipline. Church members are at rest. School patrons are at rest when the laws are followed. Churches are at rest when leaders call and lead the brotherhood to consistent practice. That is so important. Consistency. You must be consistent in your leadership. As a person in authority, as a leader, I will not tolerate disrespect to other authority. One of the things that I get provoked about it is when people in authority tear down other people's authority. If you are a dad in the home, you do not tolerate disrespect to the school board, the trustee board, and so forth. You do not tolerate that. And I will not tolerate disrespect for other authority. I will follow biblical direction in leading. Winston Churchill, I have always held him as a hero in a secular world to me, but he was a man of a lot of things to say about things. And he says, continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking potential in leadership. Continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking potential in leadership. And Winston Churchill said that. So today, just remember that you are a leader. It's very important that you lead in God's ways. You build relationships. You love and respect those you lead. You have their destiny in mind. And lead them in God's ways, in God's laws. Winston Churchill also said, success is never found. Failure is never fatal. Courage is the only thing. And the courage is the only thing. Courage to do the right thing is the only thing that matters in leadership. So let's lead our families, lead our churches, lead our schools, wherever you're a leader, let's lead them in the right way and in God's laws. Let's pray.